So here we are. So we were, I believe this is foil 20, so has, yes? The light's too intense. Is that good? I believe we got up to this page last time, which was introducing JavaScript approached in a systematic fashion. And so we pointed out here that JavaScript had a single type of variable, which is defined by the var command, and you have to be a little careful joining strings and numbers together. There's quite an interesting example here. If you go to this example, which you can get to from the web, so they set a variable to be a string 555, and then they add 10 to the string, and they subtract 10 from the string. So if you add 10 to the string, you get 55510, because JavaScript assumes that everything is a string. If you subtract 10 from the string, you get 545, because JavaScript assumes that if you're subtracting, it must mean numbers. So that shows you how ingenious it is in its creative typing. So that, but it also shows how careful you have to be. So something which is quite important is this variable null, because null is how you test to see if you've actually defined something. And you do need that in some relatively sophisticated examples. All right, so the basic arithmetic is essentially the same as C and C++, Java and Perl. So you have these various assignment operators, which are the simplest variable equals something, and then you have plus equals, which says that the variable equals the original value plus whatever's on the right-hand side. Minus equals, which means it's equal to whatever it was, minus the right-hand side, and so on. And you also have this standard conditional expression that sets the value of status, in this example here, to be either adult or minor, depending on whether the variable age is greater than or equal to 18. And you can use, as usual, plus plus to mean increment something by one. So y equals plus plus x, increments x by one, and sets y to be the final value of x. So it has these standard shifting instructions with something which I guess I wasn't familiar with, which is probably standard, which is three greater than signs, meaning a right shift with a zero fill, with two greater than signs, meaning a right shift, but just propagating the sign bit. And two less than signs is, as usual, a bitwise left shift. Now, we have logical operations which are bitwise, which are the AND sign, the OR sign, and the caret, which are AND, OR, and XOR, expressed in bit, thinking the arguments as a bunch of bits. So you will not actually usually use those. You usually would use logical operations on booleans, true and false, when they're called and, or. Those are the two standard ones. I don't think I've ever used in JavaScript the bitwise logical operations, but obviously there's some examples you might use them. So here the Boolean operations are in the middle. That's and, two and signs, two vertical bars for or, and the exclamation mark for not. Those are standard notation. And they must only operate on Boolean variables which are true or false. So in order to set Boolean variables, you often do comparisons. And in order to compare things, you use the comparison operators. And in some languages, those comparison operators are sensitive to type. In JavaScript, they're not. So equal is, so if you say A equal B, that will return true if and only if A and B are equal. So if you were doing that, say, in Perl, you would have to use equal if the numbers were numeric, and you'd have to use EQ if the numbers were string. But in JavaScript, there is no typing. So you use the same comparison operations, whatever the type. So comparisons are very straightforward as long as you know what you're doing. We've already actually illustrated in that adding of strings together the plus operator, which is a very important operator. It's the same meaning as in Java, it just joins things together. And unfortunately, Perl uses the dot operator to join things together. And I must admit, I write dot quite often in my JavaScript. And then JavaScript gets you an error message. So that's reasonably straightforward. Let's see if the examples are of any interest. So this is an extremely simple example of so this just sends a couple of variables equal to text strings and then adds them together as the first variable plus, and then in order to define a fixed string, it uses something separated by two quotes. And then it adds to that the second variable. I've already pointed out that if you wish to define strings in your JavaScript program, you can either use single quotes or double quotes, but you obviously must be consistent. If you start with a single quote, you have to end with a single quote. If you start with a double quote, you must end with a double quote. And typically you nest these so that if you have single quotes in your expressions, you must enclose that quote in double quotes. If you have single quotes and double quotes in one of your character strings, you must choose either the single or double quotes to define the character strings, and then put the backslash operator in front of the thing that you're using to delimitate, which is the standard way of doing it. Conditionals are more or less the same as normal languages. You can use else if, but only by noticing it's else followed by an if. There's no official syntax for else if in JavaScript. So the standard conditional says if some condition, then you follow it by a statement. You need a curly bracket enclosing the statement if the statement's more than one line long. You do not use the curly brackets if it's one line long. And then you can use an else operator, which is optional, and I say if can occur inside the else. So the way you do else if is by using if inside else. So the way you do loops is the same as in Java and C and essentially all languages. There's a for statement with an initial condition, a final condition to be which is the condition that has to be true while the loop is to be run, and then some expression to do increment, and then the statements to be executed are in curly brackets, and then there's a while statement which executes the curly brackets as long as the condition is true. And you can use break inside for loops to break out of the for loop, or break inside a while loop. And then there's a continue statement, which if you have a continue statement inside the body of a for or a while loop, it just goes to the end of that loop and starts the next iteration. So continue is the way you end the work you're doing on that iteration. Break is how you jump out of a for loop or a while loop. We come to something which is a little more interesting, which is the object model. And so JavaScript has a reasonably simple object model, which however is quite powerful. And as we'll see, it has a slightly confused syntax, which however is operationally quite easy to use. Now, you can officially define, if you listen to what Nancy described in the traditional object-oriented language, you can put in size objects, methods, and other objects. It is my impression that the object model in JavaScript is sufficiently deficient that it is not very useful to put methods in objects, because they do little more than copy methods from defined outside the object. So I might be wrong, but I have never found it useful to use a method inside an object. What is useful is to define objects inside objects. So I guess I think the best analogy could be the say a Unix file system, because the object structure in JavaScript is used in the same way as the Unix file system to define a hierarchical naming system. So you start off with in the case of Windows, you start off with a window called top, and then that window has a property called location, which contains its URL. It has another property called, frames of 0, which is the first frame in it, and then frames of 1 is the second frame, and then if you go inside that frames of 0, you come to another window which has all the same properties defined. So, effectively, objects are used in JavaScript to define a container for names, like a directory is used inside Unix, and you can essentially define an arbitrary hierarchical name for an object or a variable inside JavaScript by doing first, or second, or third, or fourth, or fifth, or sixth, or seventh. And those just done recursively, because any object in JavaScript can have another object as one of its so-called properties. So the things inside an object are called properties, and those can themselves be objects. So that's why it says here, an object is a container, which is what a directory is with a file system. And one particularly, there is also a syntax for arrays, which we'll describe a little later on, which is reasonably useful. So there's none of this stuff of inheritance and things like that. Let's see what examples we have here. just a table. Alright, so this basically comes from the JavaScript tutorial, which we have, which actually comes from Netscape Press, and this particular page describes the overall object hierarchy. So if you remember in Java, you started off with the object class as the top class. There's no such concept of that in JavaScript. But the thing that there's a much more operational hierarchy. So whereas the Java objects are described as a metaphysical space, the JavaScript objects are effectively defined in a space where the navigator, which is the browser, is the topmost object. So I mean, it's a physical. You're basically, that's why the Unix file system is a reasonable analogy, because you're describing physically the hierarchy of information in your web page. It starts off, I say, with the navigator object. There are, as we see, some other built-in objects not associated with the navigator object, like the math object and the string object, which are effectively separate trees of objects. And so this page here describes the various things that hang off the navigator object, like the name of the browser, the version of the browser, and stuff like that. And then underneath, there's also the so-called window object, and under the window there's the document object and the history object and stuff like that, and so on. The way you get these from the web page is you'll find a button called add-on. So when you go to this file, which is 24, you see an add-on button. You click that add-on button, you'll get that that example of an object. So as it says here, we have this general hierarchical name, which is rather different from Java, where the dot just represents the hierarchy. So again, compared to Unix file system, that dot is a slash in a Unix file system. You have directory 1, slash directory 2, slash directory 3, slash file name. Here we have dots separating the hierarchy, which is, of course, like Java. And as illustrated here, any member of that hierarchy can be an array. So they're either object names or an array index into an object name which has already been defined to be an array. And we'll describe how to define those. And some of Netscape's standard objects are arrays, like frames or images. You can also define your own arrays, which you can use for whatever purposes you want. Now, I said messages weren't terribly useful for the user. They are useful for the system. I mean, so methods, especially methods of particular objects, aren't particularly useful for the the user, because you can't really do anything with encapsulated methods, which are very interesting. But they are useful for the system to associate logically methods with the right place in the hierarchy. So when we get down to in the hierarchy to document, so that navigator.window.document, document has a method called writeln, which we've already seen, which writes a line followed by writes the argument, which is HTML, into the current document, which is the thing living in the current window. And so that's a method of the object, document object. Document, as I mentioned, has other properties, of which one of the most important is location. Location used to be a variable, but now it's a property. And it itself has a bunch of, it's now an object, it itself has a bunch of properties, like href and URL and things like that, which are the various things that define a location. So if you want the actual URL of a document, it's document.location.url. It's the URL of the current document. For instance, in the homework, which should have just got put up, now available, you'll use a method I introduced before called reload, and reload is a method of window, not of document, and so if you write window.reload, that is the method that reloads the current window. Sorry, it's a method of location, so I think it's window.location.reload. Some of the reasons I'm uncertain is that some of these things have changed between Netscape 2 and Netscape 3. The other problem is, as you see, that as I showed you this huge 6-inch thick manual, there are an enormous number of objects and methods and properties, and to remember what they are is quite hard. All right, so here is an example of a user defined function, and this user defined function is called setFrame. We've actually seen functions already, so this is just another example. And so this function is a function that loads a particular URL into a particular frame. And so it's called setFrame. It has two arguments. So you see the syntax. It's function, name of function, arguments in ordinary brackets, curly brackets, and the actual body of the function. The function does not have to have a return statement in it. So we see this statement here. So here I do some arithmetic. Actual URL is, I'm assuming there's some variable called base URL, which is defined the base URL, which I have to add relative URLs to. So I find the total URL by adding here the help.html, which is a relative URL to the base URL. Then I say top, which is, as we'll see, the topmost window in the browser, dotted into the object which labels a particular frame, dotted into location, dotted into href, and that is actually equal to the URL. You can use URL or href to define a URL. So this example illustrates another peculiar feature of JavaScript. When using arrays, you can sometimes refer to them by, you can index into arrays either by strings or by numbers. And it is a little unclear when you're allowed to do either of them. And for the frames array, Netscape allows you to index into the frame array either with the name of the frame. So for instance, here I put frame label equal to main display, which is going to be the name of the frame. I can either use that, or if this happened to be the first frame, I could write frames of 0. And those would be equivalent. In user-defined arrays, you must choose either to use indices or to use alphanumeric labels. This actually does something which has been implied by some of these things I've discussed. Is very important. The way that you, the usual way that you load a new page in JavaScript is to set the location variable of that page. So if you set the location variable of the page to a new location, that location gets loaded into that page. So this is a very interesting variable in that setting it actually causes action. So that says that JavaScript, as far as JavaScript is concerned, that's a very special variable because it actually triggers actions, not just storing a value. So you do not call a method to load a new page, although you can, because there's a replace method. But the normal way of doing it is just to set the location variable. So if you read the location variable, you get the current location. If you set it, you change it to a new location, and you load the corresponding URL into that page. So that's extremely important, because you need to do that very often. You often wish to have formed the URL by some mechanism, and you want to stick it in some frame or other. And as we've discussed, I think, many times, all this stuff should be put in the header, not in the body of the text, of the document, because things in the header are processed before everything in the body, and you want to make certain that these functions are actually known to Netscape before you use them, because otherwise you run into all sorts of trouble if you're not careful. Well, you get JavaScript errors. Let me see if there are any interesting examples. So this example here is a traditional mathematical example of the factorial routine. And so here you have a for loop running over I from 0 to 9, and then you can't read it. It says document.writeln, and it writes I factorial equals, and it calls factorial of I, and you notice the factorial of I calls itself. So this says that JavaScript supports standard recursive functions. Hopefully the number gets the answer right. Alright, so here's this slightly confusing JavaScript, but you can either call it the confusion of JavaScript or the economy of JavaScript, because JavaScript uses functions to define objects. So you can write a function which just returns factorial, and that's perfectly normal, but that will be called a method in Java. That's just like a function in most languages. But the same notation, function of some object, some name with arguments, is also used to define objects. And effectively, in the Java syntax, as I mentioned, it forms the role of the constructor for that object. So there is no difference, there is no class command, there is only a constructor. And so here's this example of an object which is meant to label, in the case I took it from was an example of how I labeled a menu, and a menu has a color for the menu, it has a preset selected menu item, it has a list of the number of items in the menu, and it has a list of the items. So if we look at this function make menu, it has two arguments, which is a sort of numerical number, so we can keep track of which number it is, and a name. So it has this overused syntax called this. So it says this.number equals number. You only, of course, need the this there to distinguish the argument.